Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. And Blessings of Liberty is the radio broadcast you're listening to. This is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. I'd like to take just a moment to invite you to come and be with us in any or all of our services. Maybe you are in the area and you do not have a church home. We'd love for you to come by. We are 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road. And you can find out more about the church. We have a church website, MountLebanonBC.org. And MTLEBANONBC.org. So we'd love for you to come visit with us in any or all of our services. I want to welcome all of our listeners today. We do appreciate those who listen in locally on WATA AM 1450. And then also on 690 AM WZAP in Bristol, Virginia, and also on 89.1 FM The Truth in Watertown, South Dakota. What an honor it is to be on these different radio stations, and we hope you'll continue to listen in and that you'll get a blessing out of the broadcast. Last week, we began to transition from the United States Constitution to the Bill of Rights. And we've been studying the United States Constitution. Well, it's just as natural as anything to go right into a study on the Bill of Rights. We're going to go through the first 10. We're not going to go through all 27 amendments, but we want to look, take some time and look at the first 10 amendments. And so we're going to continue to begin to do that today. And it takes me a while to get started sometimes, but you know, we miss a lot because we don't know the background to things, and we don't know the backstory and the why. Why? I like to ask why and find out how come. Why is it this way? And so we're giving some background information to the story of the coming about of the Bill of Rights. And I'm sure there are those who wonder why a pastor would spend time teaching U.S. history. And that's basically what we are doing and have been doing here, I think, coming up on 4 years. We've been at the Blessings of Liberty or working on this radio broadcast. But it's basically U.S. history. That's what we've been looking at. I would say we're looking at it from a Christian perspective. I believe that's important. Some think pastors and churches should never say anything about government or politics or even education or things that matter in society like the family or abortion or something like that. And I really believe that's one of the reasons why our nation is in such trouble, because pastors and Christians, church people, they have failed for the lie. See, I believe that's a lie from the devil that people listen to, that churches and pastors shouldn't say anything about government or politics or education. Who says so? Who says? Why is it? You know, you'll hear people all the time, well, the preacher, he shouldn't say anything about, well, why not? Who says? Who made up that rule? Who says, give me a chapter and a verse that says that a pastor shouldn't say anything about the government or politics or social issues? What chapter and verse could you come up with that says the preacher, all he should do is just preach the gospel? The Lord made 3 institutions. What I mean by that, these are from God, not the idea of man. The Lord made the family. Therefore, the church, the pastor, the preacher ought to be able to preach and speak upon the family. The Lord instituted human government. Genesis chapter number 9. And all through the Bible, we see that God has said things about civil human government. Therefore, the pastor ought to be able to preach and speak upon matters concerning civil government. And the Lord made the church. We go over to the New Testament to find the beginning of the church. And of course, we would agree that the Lord, that the pastor and the church ought to be able to speak upon the church. So that's what we're doing. We are dealing with things concerning civil government. I would give three verses to share with those who think that the pastor or the church shouldn't say anything about the government or politics in general. I don't like that word any better than anybody else. And I do not claim to be political. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I am independent. And so we're not being political one way or the other. But the Bible said in John 8:32, and I love this verse. In fact, I preached on it. It was part of my message last Sunday morning. But I preached on John 8:32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Truth is a great liberator. It'll set you free spiritually, mentally, historically, educationally, right on down the road. The greatest friend America could have right now in these perilous times are those who speak the truth. Don't you get tired of all the lies and the deception, and you hear commercials and the news, and you hear politicians giving speeches and making promises, and you just know it's a big fat lie. You just know that's not the way it is. Man, I get tired of that. We need some people that'll speak the truth. The truth will make you free is what the Bible says. And then there's another verse, Hosea 4:6. The Bible says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children." Boy, you talk about a stern warning from the Word of God. And what we learn from Hosea 4:6 is that lack of knowledge or lack of truth, we could say right there, brings destruction. We could also say from that verse that rejection of the Lord and His law means that God rejects us and forgets our children. It affects our posterity, our children, our grandchildren, and right on down the line. Rejection of the Lord and His law is a very serious thing, and it brings about very serious consequences to a nation. You see, our laws were originally based upon God's laws. I'm talking about the beginnings of our nation, even before the American Revolutionary War, before the Declaration of Independence. This is why so many courthouses all across America have the Ten Commandments. Well, and people today, well, we want to get the Ten Commandments out of the courthouse. Well, why do you think they were there to begin with? Because our nation was based upon the laws of God. Pardon me, the Ten Commandments. And so Hosea 4:6, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." We need the truth. We need knowledge. We need to know why we are the way we are. How did America come to be? And then third, I would say Psalms 11:3, "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And America's foundation was, and I have to speak almost in the past tense now, but America's foundation was the Bible and a Judeo-Christian heritage. And so there's three verses. We could give many more. I know that the secular world and the educational elites in the government-run schools would tell us that the Constitution has nothing to do with God or religion. We hear all the time, and I hear people falsely say, they'll talk about the Constitution and separation of church and state. I've seen that in newspaper articles. I've heard that argument made, people talking on the radio. But we've been studying the Constitution for 9 or 10 weeks now. I've read it through several times. Do you know the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, or the Bill of Rights, they say nothing about separation of church and state. That phrase came from a letter written by Thomas Jefferson to a group of Baptists called the Danbury Baptist Association. But there are those, they say, the Constitution has nothing to do with God, nothing to do with religion. Well, I would beg to differ on that, but for the sake of argument, we could say the Constitution has nothing to say concerning God or religion or the Bible. If we were just going to concede that, just for the sake of argument, although, and I will say this before moving on, Article 1, Section 7 in the Constitution says a great deal about that subject with only two words, and the two words are in parentheses. I've never heard this mentioned. I've never had it. I didn't read it in an article or somebody else bring it up, but I noticed in reading through the Constitution that in Article Chapter 1, Section, Verse Number 7, it's concerning the business days of the House of Representatives, and it has two words in parentheses. It says, Sundays excepted. And to me, that says a great deal about the mindset of those who worked and labored to write and to come up with the United States Constitution. They were not going to conduct business on Sundays. Sundays excepted. Well, why would they accept Sundays? Why not say, well, let's take Monday off or Saturday off? A lot of people like to take Saturday off, but they said, you know what? The day we're not going to do business on is Sunday, and Sunday is the Lord's day. And they didn't want to take Sundays off so they could go fishing or golfing or something like that. But in America in the 1700s, Sunday was the Lord's day. That was the day of worship. That was the Christian Sabbath is what many referred to it as. So I believe the Constitution, we can say, does have, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But if we could just agree to disagree and say, okay, Constitution is secular. Let's just agree to disagree, and we'll just say that. The Constitution says nothing about God, religion, or the Bible. But I would say this, you cannot say that about the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence mentions specifically God at least four times, two times in the beginning and two times at the end. It talks about in the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, talks about the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them. In the second paragraph, which is the one most people are familiar with, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator, with a capital C, with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Do you know the founding fathers? They believed in creation. They believed in a creator. They were talking about the Lord, the laws of nature and of nature's God. Then in the end of it, towards the last paragraph, it said, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world. They were talking there about God, the God of the Bible, Jehovah God. They believed in a judgment as well. And then the very last sentence, it says, and for the support of this declaration with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. They talked a lot about divine providence with a capital P. They were talking about God. Now, if you would not have had the Declaration of Independence, there would have never been a United States Constitution as we have it. Abraham Lincoln likened it to the book of Proverbs, where it talks about apples of gold in pictures of silver. There's a famous speech that he made about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and how both of them must go together. And then we go through the Constitution, which is a business document. It's talking about it, the government of the United States and how it's to be run. And so we have the Declaration of Independence at the beginning. We have the Constitution. Then on the other side of the Constitution, immediately in our nation's government, we have the Bill of Rights. And you know, the very first amendment in the Bill of Rights has to do with religion. And I'm going to read the First Amendment. Now, it does not only have to do with religion, but the first part of it has to do with religious freedom. I'm going to read the First Amendment. We call it commonly the Bill of Rights, but it's the first 10 amendments. And so Amendment 1, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The very first amendment to the United States Constitution has to do with religion. It has to do with religious freedom. Evidently, to these people in the 1700s, religious freedom was a very, very important subject unto them. Had there been no Bill of Rights, there would have been no United States Constitution. In fact, I talked about this last week, 9 states had to ratify the Constitution. There's 13 colonies. Rhode Island wasn't even present at the Continental Congress when they came together to redo the Articles of Confederation, which actually they did. They came up with the Constitution. They basically trashed the Articles of Confederation, and then they came out through the summer or at the end of the summer with the United States Constitution. So they had to have 9 to ratify to make it the supreme law of the land. One of the states wasn't even represented. There was a lot of work yet to be done. But the state conventions, they originally came back with 70 amendments. They said there's things we don't like about this. And we talked last week about the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. The Federalist, which are for a more centralized, powerful government, they gave us the Constitution. The Anti-Federalist, they were for a smaller, limited government, and they wanted these rights, these Bill of Rights. And had they not got the promises that this would be the very first order of business, they would have never ratified the United States Constitution to begin with. So had you not had the Bill of Rights, you wouldn't have had the Constitution. These states, and I read this last week, before the Bill of Rights, before the first 10 amendments, it talks about the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. And so they said, this is the first thing. We want these amendments. And so that was the first order of business once the United States Constitution was ratified. Now, the reason the First Amendment has to do with freedom of religion is because there was a time in America when there was no such thing. It is ironic that the Pilgrims and the Puritans, now this especially applies to the Puritans, who came after the Pilgrims, they established the Massachusetts Bay Colony. I'm sure that you are familiar with the Puritans coming and the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They came after the Pilgrims, but it's ironic that they came to America seeking freedom from religious oppression, but they did not allow others to have the same privilege of freedom of religion that they desired to have. There was a Baptist preacher. His name is Solomon Paine. He was ordained a separate Baptist preacher in 1745. He said this about the persecution of the Puritans. He said, "I cannot but marvel to see how soon the children will forget the sword that drove their fathers into this land." He was talking about why the Puritans came. They were being persecuted in England. So the sword drove them into this land, talking about America. "I cannot but marvel to see how soon the children will forget the sword that drove their fathers into this land and take hold of it as a jewel and kill their grandchildren therewith. Oh, that men could see how far this is from Christ's rule. And in the beginning, before the United States of America, of course, it was still America. I mean, we talk about coming to America, it may not have been the United States, but it was still America, and people came to America seeking religious freedom. Many of them, not all of them, but many came. And they came to the different colonies, and each colony had a church, a state church. Each colony had a state church, with the exception of Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island was founded by Baptists, and they, of all the colonies, they're the only one that had complete freedom of religion. And that was the way Rhode Island was established. But basically, it was broke down like this. In the northern colonies, you had the Puritans. They had what they called congregational churches. And you had Massachusetts, and you had Connecticut, the states up north. They were controlled by the congregational churches. They called them the standing order churches, and they were the law. They were the government. It was all entwined together. You've heard maybe in history about they were called the Black Hats. You've maybe heard about the Salem witch trials, and that witches were, you know, there's just a frenzy there. And many of those that were accused of being witches were actually Baptist people, and they were put to death by the Black Hats. And so up north, you had the congregational churches. In the south, the southern colonies, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, you had the Anglican or the Episcopal Church, and that was the Church of England in America. That's the Anglican Church. And I will say this, Pennsylvania was established by the Quaker William Penn. That's why we call Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, because of William Penn. Now, the Quakers, they had a different idea concerning religious freedom. They tolerated is what they did. And they believed like this, live and let live. We'll let you come here, and you can believe whatever you want to, just don't bother us. And it's on the Liberty Bell that we have Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. But it was specifically the Puritans and the Anglicans. They were death on the Baptists and the Quakers and on each other. If you had the Anglicans in the north, they would be persecuted by the congregational churches. If you had the congregational come into the south, they were persecuted by the Anglican churches. So they, whatever they were, they didn't allow anybody else. Religious persecution in America can be traced all the way back to 1635 and the eventual banishment of Roger Williams. Roger Williams, he founded Rhode Island. The reason he founded Rhode Island and the reason he proclaimed religious freedom and liberty of conscience is because he was banished from the colony of Massachusetts by the Standing Order Church in Massachusetts. And he wouldn't go along with a lot of the things that they were promoting and preaching. He came to America to have religious freedom. And he got over and he found, well, this is no different than it was in England. I'm persecuted over there and persecuted over here. And for his preaching, they eventually banished him to the wilderness, which was a death sentence in the 1600s. The wilderness was really the wilderness. Well, through the providence of God, and you know the capital in Rhode Island, or I think it's the capital, but the first city there, or the first place, was Providence. He established Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island. But he was persecuted for his religious beliefs. So it can be traced all the way back, talking about religious persecution in America, can be traced all the way back to 1635, all the way up until after the American Revolutionary War. There was still persecution after the American Revolutionary War, and all the way up until the First Amendment. We had state-sponsored persecution. Persecution involved banishments. Roger Williams, many others were banished to the wilderness. Shortly after Roger Williams was a man named John Clark who established the First Baptist Church in America in Rhode Island. But they were banished. Their land, their homes, their tools, their animals many times would be confiscated and sold to pay a tax, a ministerial tax. If you were a Baptist, you still had to pay a tax to support the standing order church. Maybe you didn't even believe in what they were doing. You didn't believe in infant baptism. Your tax money would go to support that church. How would you like that? Their lands could be confiscated. They were imprisoned. They were fined. They were beaten. And they even suffered capital punishment. Let me give just a short example. This is from 1721. In 1721, there was a group of standing order ministers in Massachusetts, and they desired to go into Rhode Island, where they had religious freedom, and start to build standing order or congregational churches. So they wrote to the governor of Rhode Island. His name was Jonathan Sprague, and Jonathan Sprague called them on the carpet, you might say, about their religious persecution. You know, of course, he would be concerned about that, but he said, "You're free to come and do so, but what about this?" And he brought up the fact that Christians had been persecuted, specifically the Baptists in Massachusetts, by the very people that wanted to come into Rhode Island and start building congregational churches. Well, he wrote this reply to them. He said, "Why do you strive to persuade the rising generation that you never persecuted nor hurt the Baptists? Did you not barbarously scourge Mr. Obadiah Holmes and imprison John Hazel of Rehoboth?" Now, Obadiah Holmes was beaten in Boston, Massachusetts, for holding a church service in a man's house. And they beat him with the intention of killing him, but the Lord divinely sustained him. And after his beating, he said, "You have struck me but with roses." And I mean, they beat him until the flesh came off his back. He carried those scars until the day that he died. Mr. Obadiah Holmes, everybody in American history ought to know his name. But he talked about imprisoned John Hazel, who died and came not home. "And did you not barbarously scourge Mr. Baker in Cambridge, the chief mate of a London ship, where also you imprisoned Mr. Thomas Gold, John Russell, Benjamin Sweetser, and many others, and fined them £50 a man? And did you not take away a part of said Sweetser's land to pay his fine, and conveyed it to Solomon Phipps, the deputy governor Danforth's son-in-law, who after, by the hand of God, ran distracted, dying suddenly, saying he was bewitched?" And so they took the man's land, gave it to one of their buddies, and he run off and died. That's what it's saying. "And did you not nail up the Baptist meeting house doors and find Mr. John Miles, Mr. James Brown, and Mr. Nicholas Tanner? Surely I can fill sheets of paper with the suffering of the Baptists as well as others within your precincts, but what I have mentioned shall suffice for the present. Jonathan Sprague, 1721. And so how interesting that is. Now, we just take religious freedom for granted here in America. But the fact that you can go to any church you want to, or no church if you don't want to, there was a price paid by our forefathers. And that was part of it. They were making people go to church. And so Sunday, if you get up and you say, "I don't want to go," nobody will come to your house and get you and drag you to church. We have religious freedom in America. Somebody paid a great price for the freedoms that we have, and they're there for a very real reason. Well, we have enjoyed being here today. I want to just say as we close that this is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. We're located at 1128 Baird's Creek Road. That's 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road in Vilas, North Carolina. We'd love for you to come visit with us anytime in any of our services. And we appreciate the opportunity to be here. We hope you have a great day, and God bless you is our prayer.